what you did last week. Awesome.
Oh, look at guys. Look at this. I got a new phone the other day. It's red. Ooh, yeah. It's the iPhone XR. The whole family upgraded. I got a new one. So my daughter got a new one. So the other one got a new one. They didn't get new ones. They just passed down, but it was cool. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Spilling Ink, the talk show that you've been waiting for your whole lives. And I'm here with you, right here beside you, on the couch, in your bed, in your car.
No.
But I did get a new phone.
That was good.
Oh. Well, it's Jason. You guys know me. I'm here with the amazing Katie Salidas. Katie, how's it going?
I am so happy to be here with my friends. I miss you guys.
Katie has been having so much fun for the past week at Comic-Con. I'm so super jelly. And then Jane is out there in her amazing vacation home on the ocean. Oh,
yes.
And I'm stuck in Michigan. I need to get out of this state. But at least I'm not alone. I feel comforted knowing that our guest today, the great, the powerful Julia Allen, is also stuck in Michigan with me.
I am in Michigan. Yes, I'm very stuck here.
She's on the other side of the Michigan hand. And we're like, I don't know, which way do we do that? We're the only state that can actually do that. You know, and Wisconsin tries to do it, but they're like, doesn't work. It's not real, guys. Just get over it.
Yeah, fakers, so man.
She's way over here and I'm way over there. Yeah, I'm sure everybody understands what that means. Oh, well, how are you tonight, Julia?
I am doing well. Very excited to be here.
Good, good. Can you, I know you. Well, although I did just ask you before we went on air if you were someone that I thought you were, because my brain doesn't work very well. We'll blame it on rock concerts and drugs, maybe. I don't know.
Lack of sleep. There's a million things we could blame it on, yeah.
Oh, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I am an author. I write as J.K. Allen. I write primarily young adult urban fantasy, but I do dabble in other genres like poetry and short horror stories and stuff like that. I am also one of the ladies at Three Furies Press. So I do that with Issa McLaren and Rebecca Jonesy. We're an indie publishing house, so that's very exciting for me. I get to do what I love all day long.
That sounds like the dream job, right?
It really, really is. And it's like also like when you're working for yourself, it doesn't feel like work because you're just like, I'm excited to do this project today because I want to do it. And so you can spend like 12 hours working and not even feel like you're working at all. Yeah.
Katie, what do you have to say about that statement she just made?
What? I agree with her. If you love what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work. And that's why you end up working until 2-3 o'clock in the morning and
exactly
6 a.m. the next day.
Because I've gotten plenty of messages from you in the middle of the night. What the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, okay. So I can't be blamed for things that I send after midnight. Okay, guys, that doesn't count.
Well, that's when the sleep deprivation kicks in, and then you just say anything and you don't even remember saying it the next day.
Or you're on your like fifth Red Bull of the day and you're completely climbing the walls and you need somebody to bounce ideas off of. And, you know, those ideas will be crazy.
Yes, yes.
Time difference.
Yeah, all my friends are on the wrong coast, damn it.
Well, and the problem is, too, is when the only people left awake are your dogs and your cat, the ideas you start getting back are really kind of messed up. Mm-hmm, they don't work very well. Oh, goodness. Well, tonight, it's a great night tonight, guys. You guys were gone last weekend, and it was just me talking for like an hour and a half, so everybody was sick of me. So now we finally have my girls back. It's just so good. What are we talking about tonight? I mean, I know you bring topics. You're the organized one.
Well, I actually want to talk about what you did last week, because that was a surprise, and that was awesome. How did you decide to do that? How'd that come about?
Well, yeah, I'm laughing at Rebecca Jonesy. She says, so that preposition last night wasn't real, Katie? I don't know what you guys were talking about. But funny story, Rebecca and Katie. Heather and I, my wife, were just watching a movie called The Perfection on Netflix. It's one of those Netflix originals. And there was some pretty intense lady stuff going on. I was like, oh, okay. That's not really what we expected, but great. Oh, nice. I'm sorry, Joshua. I thought it was okay. I did. I'm sorry. I mean, I climbed the bean pole to get to the giant's house, and I slid in under the door in the crack. And no, last weekend I did a little solo poetry reading daily. You know, I love the women in my life, and I love all women everywhere. You guys are all amazing, and you really change the world for the better. And you live lives that us men really we flat out couldn't handle it. We couldn't do it. And so I just wanted to do a show that was giving thanks to women. So a lot of people sent in their poetry. A couple people just sent me really cool emails with some stories that they relayed to me. And I read some poetry for about an hour and kind of blathered down like I do always. But yeah, it was a really good time, and I was happy to do it. And I seem to be getting a good response from it. So that's awesome. Yeah. You asked me a question about last weekend, right? Was that?
I did. I asked you about that. I was at the booth, and one of the readers that we both know, Zan, came up, and he's like, "Did you see what Jason did?" And I went, "What do you mean? What did Jason do?"
Oh, right.
Zan was there. Oh,
he was very sad. He didn't see you, by the way. He was looking forward to having you there. So we have got to figure out a way to hide you in our suitcases next time.
I agree. I like it. I'm good with that. I will do that. And Zan sent me in a poem as well that I read, and I totally butchered his poem, so I had to apologize to him for that. I was just reading, and I skipped over a whole stanza on there, but I fixed it in the editing later. I sounded amazing after some editing.
Yes. Well, I thought it was an awesome idea. I thought it was really, really cool. And it was a good little surprise, I think, for our viewers, too.
Well, cool. Well, thanks. I had fun doing it. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there with women's rights. And we aren't a political show, so I didn't want to have a political show. But I just wanted to do something, giving thanks and showing some respect to women. That's all.
Yeah. Awesome, as always.
Yeah. All right.
What do we talk about tonight, guys?
Ooh, we are talking about topics. The dark side of being an author. Dun, dun, dun. Yes. That's what I heard. That's what they told me, guys. I didn't make that up. I'm serious. Three women told me that's what we're talking about. So they're all looking surprised, like oh, come on, guys.
So we're not talking about the midnight writing, just the literal dark side of writing.
The struggles.
Yes.
Because I'm struggle busing it like crazy right now.
Yeah. What are you struggling with?
Well, okay. So I'm trying to write like a lead magnet to my new series. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of procrastinating a little bit on editing the final book of my last trilogy. And so I've been trying to plot the next series and like get excited about writing again and get back into things. So I like planned a little bit for this lead magnet of the kind of like this background story for my new protagonist. And it's like, I know the guideposts of like what's going to happen, but I sit down to write and I'm just like staring at the blank page, like, nothing is coming to me.
It's so frustrating because, and it seems like we were just talking about something similar to this, but because you set aside time for yourself to be able to work.
Yes.
And then you sit down and work. And when you get that space out, it's like, it hits you double. It's like, okay, one, I can't think of anything. And two, now I'm wasting my own time. It's such a bummer.
Right. And it's like you get stuck in this train of thought that like, I can't think of what to write. And then that makes you not be able to think of what to write.
Yeah.
Right. Or you know, when you finish a series, the after series blues.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then what to pick next. I mean, you know, thankfully I'm doing a little bit on the co-writing things, but everything else, I'm like, where do I go next? because I'm sort of still in mourning for the characters that I just left behind.
Yeah, I think I'm experiencing a little bit of that as well. Like knowing that I'm leaving like Ginny and Aiden behind is like really killing me in a way, because I'm like trying to get just as connected and excited about my new characters. And they're still so fresh to me, and I'm so attached to my old characters that I think that's part of the struggle, is like I'm trying to get as into going on adventures with them as I was with the other characters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the newness of the new stuff. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're writing in maybe a little different genre, like I'm looking to go into fantasy, so I have to really world build instead of urban fantasy, which is our world with magic.
Right.
So yes, it is
post project letdown. I like that as an official term.
Yes.
Point that is an official term.
Yes. So it's connecting with the new stuff. As you're saying, you're staring at the page, you're putting like a, three or four words down. It's not three or four paragraphs, three or four words, maybe a sentence, and you're like, come on, connect.
Right. Yeah. I know a lot of authors are like, oh, shiny new idea, but I am not like that at all. I want the connection with the character. Like, that's what really gets me excited.
Well, yeah.
Josh, so I am totally not getting off track here. Just for a minute. Hey, so Josh, I was thinking about doing this Friday for your show on The Raven. How does that sound to you, man? Just comment back. This is a really effective means of communication too, by the way.
totally derail the topic. So
no, I like this topic because I actually had something that I wanted to add. I absolutely love shiny new projects, and I only get them when I'm like 30,000 words into the project I'm working on. Then I'm like, well, crap, now what do I do? Now all I want to think about is this shiny new project. I don't want to finish the other one. But no, I get so ADD with them when I get about halfway done, because by halfway, I know what's going to happen. I mean, I've got it down. I'm like, kind of like, oh, okay, it's already written, but it's not already written. It's just in my freaking head. So this is a challenge that I've got to try to get over here. So that's why short stories are so great for me, because 10K, no problem. Easy. Wrap it all up and you're done. Mm-hmm. 80K. That's tough for a guy like me.
That's where I'm sitting at. I get the end of book paralysis, where I know where the story is supposed to end, and I know I'm getting to that point, and for some reason my mind goes blank, or I just can't force the words out. Even though I know where it's going, I can't get the words out. And if I do, I hate the words that I've written. And so I'm there right now. I'm on like the literal last chapter of this book, and it's just a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you do to get through that?
Right. Start a new project.
Spend time on Facebook.
Pull the words out like pulling teeth.
Hug all of my friends at midnight. Play meme wars with Rebecca.
Surf Facebook.
Well, and see, I'll get to a point where when I get stuck like that, I will actually, after about 2 weeks of just, staring at the keyboard. I'd much rather write 90K than a short story. More time to make things come together. You know, I love getting to know the characters better. I love being able to build in more depth. But again, the ADD thing, it's really nice just to be able to zoom, burn right through it. It's great.
I will, Joe. I will message you at midnight.
but midnight, whose time?
Oh, he's on the same time as me, so we're good.
Oh, is he? Oh.
Yeah,
my one friend on the West Coast.
Nice.
I agree with Anita, the research rabbit hole. Yep.
Ancient letters.
No, The Raven, Josh. The Raven. I mean, you can come on our show anytime you want, Joshua, but no, I was talking about The Raven. Hey, wait, who's that dude that just walked by?
That's my husband.
Oh.
I, You have to come back in this room too.
And like a ghost.
Yes, I'll go like this as he walks by.
Josh, I feel like you should be here with us. I really do. And Anita. Well, and Isa, you guys should all be here with us tonight. I know you technically are, but like on camera so I can see you guys and make faces at you and stuff. Yeah.
Right. We'll just see how many we can fit into the stream. I think StreamYard only allows for six, but there's another one that allows for multiple.
They upped it to 10, I think.
Did they?
We just got an email that they were upping it to 10.
Ooh. Nice.
Sorry, Joe.
I know we've told him so many times, Joe. He just, it's in one ear and out the other. You can literally see what he said.
I was hoping I didn't.
How do we fix these problems? Because we listed three, and we should probably actually talk about how we get over these problems seriously rather than, you know, all the things we do to continue on with them.
Lap sitting is an option, Isa. You're right. Wait, what?
What?
She was solving a problem. We're solving a problem here, all right?
Apparently the comment section.
Hey, hello, husband.
Our conversation.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I try to like do a little plotting and a little daydreaming. So, like I said, I'll have these like guideposts of like, I want it to get to this point, but I don't really know how to get there. So then I try to just be like, well, how do I connect the dots? You know, and maybe daydream a little bit about like, this is what the scene could be like, or this is how they get there, or, you know.
You know, what I kind of do when I get stuck like that after those couple of weeks. Oh, that's right. I was talking about this before I squirreled out on Facebook comments. I'll start not really an outline, but just kind of a scene chart of like, okay, these are the things I know need to happen. But then once I have that written, I'm like, oh, now I extra don't want to write these because now it doesn't feel creative because I've written it down ahead of time and pretty much just have to beat myself into submission, struggling through each line. But that only lasts for like one or two paragraphs. And then all of a sudden it's like you've gotten jump started. You know, once you struggle your way through those first couple lines, usually the motor's running and you can power through 1,000 words or so. But you know, that doesn't work for everybody, but you know, I always like to, end on a cliffhanger when I stop a writing session. That way I know that I still have to pick that up and I know where it's going and kind of get myself going. And I know that's a method that a lot of people use, but it seems to be pretty effective for me.
Yeah, I love sceneless. I do a lot of sceneless. So it's like I'll figure out like the big action of that chapter. Mm-hmm. And then I'll maybe like set a goal for myself. Like I want to develop this character relationship, or I want to show a real big sense of grief for this character, or I need to introduce this plot device. That kind of helps me just like kind of figure out a little bit like where I want to go with the scene. And then I can sit down and write it. But that stopping in the middle is great when you're like, okay, I only have a couple hours to work, and you get to the middle of the chapter and you're like, I'm going to stop now. So when I sit down tomorrow, I know exactly what I'm doing.
Well, you know where I am right now, Julia, and maybe you can help me with this because you're an editor and you know what you're doing. You know, the last novel that I started, and it is probably about halfway done. That's always where I have problems. Mm-hmm. But I outlined the entire thing, and it's actually a really good outline. I like where it goes. I'm happy with the scenes that I've chosen. But now in the story, and there's always just a little bit of wiggle room, but now I've got a character that has an opportunity to kind of fork off with where I'm going. And if she goes one direction, she's going to follow the outline, and it will be a more true to life story. Mm-hmm. Because this is based on an actual person. It's not a true story, but it's based on an actual person in her life. Whereas if she forks off in the other direction, it will definitely make the story more dynamic. It will create more conflict. It will create not only physical conflict, but emotional conflict, and could add more to it. However, it's it's not even close to what happened in reality. So I'm kind of at this point where, do I do this for sensationalism's sake, or do I stay true to the original vision? And so I'm stuck right at the mouth of this why, not knowing which direction to go. And that's kind of why I put it down for a while I let it, you know, ferment.
I would say it's not about whether this is sensational, but like, I love the word you use, dynamic. Like, does this make for better storytelling? Because you're not writing a memoir, you're not writing nonfiction, you're not writing based on a true story. So you don't have that like obligation to stick towards like the events as they happened. It's like, think about what is best for the story rather than, is this like it happened in real life?
Well, and see, and here's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Because I've had that conversation with myself, and you know, part of me really wants to do this because I like the conflict it's going to add with one of my main characters, and mm-hmm. I like that it's really going to chew her up, and it's something that could happen, you know, in another reality, mm-hmm. And it's going to affect her for the rest of her life. However, I don't want to be that guy that's just constantly beating on the main character just for the sake of that. Here's another conflict I can show you. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes right. when I'm reading a novel, I get a little exhausted by that. You know, I like a good amount of conflict. That's why we read books. But mm-hmm. If it's just smacking somebody over and over and over, it's like, okay, come on, really? What else can you do? So I don't know how much is too much. You know, I haven't been horrible to this character so far, but I don't know.
I think it depends on the ending of the story, because you can have conflict in the beginning and the middle. That'll carry you through. But it's how much conflict you put in the end that can kind of like cross that line of being like, okay, now this is just bad stuff happening to the character for like more sensationalism rather than like what I liked what you said about your original outline is that it's realistic and true to life. Is this new veering off way still realistic and true to life, even though it's not a true story?
Well, and that's the thing, you know, we're dealing with in this section, we're dealing with a girl whose best friend has been viciously abused by one of their parents. And in the real life event, they just kind of charge through it and deal with emotional baggage as they go. In the other direction that my mind keeps wanting to go is she going to try to intervene and do something about it, which isn't something that typically happens with this type of thing with teenagers. So is it something that could happen in real life? Yes. And it could have serious real life consequences that would probably make for really good reading. But I don't know. I don't know. I part of me feels like, no, you should be just sticking to your outline.
Well, you got to stay true to the character. If she's the type of person who would want to intervene, who would want to support her friend in a tangible way, then I think you have to go with that.
Okay. No, that's fair.
I have to agree. You got to go with what the character would actually do overall. Well,
in this real life person, because this book is based on a series of really bizarre paranormal events that have happened throughout her life. So I'm telling the story of her life. It's a biopic up until her early 40s. But I'm telling about these crazy things that have happened. And she is the type of person that would do anything for anyone, mm-hmm. you know, she's just that type of person. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it seems like your instinct and your gut is telling you the character would do this, but you're tying yourself down to an outline because you wrote it out. Outlines change all the time. Like I make an outline and then I sit down to write and I'm like, oh wait, this chapter is completely different. You know,
I don't write outlines. I write to-do lists. Because then you don't have to worry about breaking the outline because you're not breaking it. You're just checking off items that you know you need to do.
Right, right. Like I said, if you have guideposts, like it doesn't have to be like chapter by chapter, bullet point by bullet point. Like you have guideposts, they're going to do this or they're going to travel here or they're going to do this quest. Like, but like don't feel like just because you – like solidified it in pen and paper, that you have to stick with that. Your instinct and your gut is telling you the character would really do this in this situation, and I think you should follow that.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah.
And we have quite a conversation going on out there. From what I understand, Rebecca is going to be chasing
outline. I like that one.
Rebecca Jonesy is chasing everyone down with a cattle prod, but it only seems to be the men. I'm not really terribly surprised about that, Rebecca. But no, and Robert, just to let you know that all my life I have been a pantser. This is the first novel that I've outlined. I've always enjoyed pantsing. However, I get stuck so horribly around 50%. But then guess what? I wrote a great outline, and now I'm stuck around 50% because my character doesn't want the outline. So
we shouldn't label ourselves and feel like we're stuck with those labels. Yes, there are pantsers and there are plotters, but there's so many shades of gray in between that you can be. And you can do, like you said, you can create, you know, plot points that you want to hit. You can write to-do lists for your characters. You can write shopping lists for your characters. You don't have to have a hard outline. You can find what fits with you to allow you the flexibility to go off book without feeling like you're breaking rules, but still give you the structure that you need to make sure that your book gets where it needs to go.
Right. And my process changes for each book. Sometimes I go full plotter mode where I'm like character sheets and here's an outline and I go chapter by chapter or make a scene list. And other times I'm just like, oh, I'm going to free write about the personality of this character rather than fill out a questionnaire. So it really depends on like what my mood is and what the kind of the mood for that book is. But I used to be the biggest pantser in the world, and I never finished anything because I didn't know what was happening. I was like, what's happening next? I have no idea. And then I just put the story down and start something else. And I was just like, when I was like, I need to finish something and like really work on writing as like what I'm doing with my life. That's when I was like, outline, like researching different types of outlines to find one that worked for me rather than like the academic outline you learn in high school that's like drains the soul out of you to fill outline by line, you know? Like, so because there's like 100 different ways to outline.
Like, have you seen the people who have like the pictures and everything behind them with the string attached to one? I want to see somebody really do that.
But I'm a pantser as well, or I have been, you know, since I started. The first outline I did was the one with when I co-wrote with my son. I made him do the outline. I wrote it, but I made him do the outline. And I made him come talk to me when the story seemed to go off and say, okay, this is where the story seems to be going. Do you want to go that direction? And if so, how does this change? So he did that stuff. So, you know, it was interesting. You know, I've got some outlines now, but I'm still not. I mean, the last series I did, Katie, the one you read, beta read for me, I had no outlines. And I was writing scene, and if I got stuck, I just jumped to the next scene and wrote the next scene and just had a break in the book. And I had never written that way before either, because I usually write chronologically. And I was like, well, I'm stuck here. I'm just going to write. I have this other scene in my head. Just get it down. So that freed me.
But now look at the one that we're going to co-write together. I don't want to give too many details because I know we haven't publicly talked about it. But you and I sat down for a good hour one day and we didn't plot out the whole thing, but we hit major points that we know we hit in the series. And it was like the to-do list almost. We checked off our bad guys. We checked off things that we want the character to do. So that way when we start writing it, both you and I have that place to start. We know where we're heading.
Right. Exactly. And we know what major battles our main character has to, you know, overcome. So
let me show you kind of what I'm working on over here. Taking over your screen. Nope. So this is my outline for the novel I'm working on. And what I've got is Yeah, well, and so, you know, like the opening here, this will serve as our introduction to Persephone and our first look at the strange things that happen in her life. And then we've got five scenes that are going to be roughly 1,000 words each, because that's what I like my scenes to be. And then the, you know, the second act, I guess, whatever, they're separated by how old she is. And so then I've got scenes laid out in there. And, you know, as we go on, some of them get more detailed, some of them get really brief while I'm just spitballing things. But, yeah, it's... Yeah.
Scare me.
Yeah. It's really fun. That would
frighten me.
Right, but what you can do is take an index card or a post-it note and just write one sentence, character goes on quest.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scene less. That's the same thing Jason's doing, except for he's just detailing it a little more. Like, you can make it as loose and as free as you want to. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And sometimes that's all it takes, is just a couple ideas scribbled down, or what Katie does with her to-do list. You know, she just said, hey, this is what my character needs to accomplish to make this story a story.
Right. And kill the dragon, but you don't know how you're killing the dragon. You're still pantsing that part of it. You're just checking off the plot point.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, no, exactly. I've got a question for you guys, since we're talking about the dark side of writing, which really isn't the dark side. It's just kind of some of the obnoxious shit that we've got to put up with. How do you guys find motivation to keep going when books aren't selling well?
Because the story's in my head, and if I don't get it out, I won't remember shit at work.
That's not the answer I was expecting. Cool.
Because it clogs up the brain. I don't know. I just do, because.
I think for me, it comes down to what I write. I don't necessarily write to market. What I write are like kind of like mini passion projects for me. So it's an idea that I fell in love with. It's characters that I really adore and I'm attached to. So for me, it's like I still have that strong desire that I want to write it, even if only one person reads it. Because I care about the story enough to tell the story. It's not just about, can I sell this on this, like, this day's market.
What about you, Katie?
Writing's like a compulsion. I have to write. But when I'm in like the doldrums of nobody's reading my work, why am I bothering? Mm-hmm. Sometimes writing becomes my excuse to ignore those little voices in my head, where I can focus on the story I like, or maybe a really cathartic scene that I want to write and work through to avoid dealing with those feelings, you know, and I'll put that off for another day. And sometimes it works. Sometimes you can push off the bad feelings until they go away. And sometimes you push them off for long enough that you can come up with a better way to deal with them. But writing seems to always be there as kind of my go-to, my way to exercise those demons.
Okay. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that everyone has those feelings. No matter why you write, I feel like we all have like imposter syndrome, and it comes and it goes, and you may feel like, okay, I'm a decent writer one day, and the next day you're like, why am I even doing this? No one cares. It's very natural. Like, we all feel that way at different points. So you just have to like find your reasons to like keep going, to fight against that voice that's telling you it's pointless, or that's telling you like you should just give up. Because it's like anxiety. You get that voice in your head that's criticizing you and being negative and telling you there's no point. It's lying. It's not true. It's just a voice in your head. And you just have to find a way to say like, no, stop it, voice. I'm going to do this, you know.
It's natural to self-doubt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I want to come back to imposter syndrome in just a minute here. Saw some of my... Here, put that back up there.
Oh, sorry.
So Joshua Robertson, absolutely. Saw some of my newest reviews this past week. Definitely gave me imposter syndrome.
Never read the reviews. Just don't.
Well, so I wanted to come back to imposter syndrome, but I guess we'll kind of chat about that now a little bit. And this is something that I suffer from really bad. Really, really bad. You know, I will get super excited about a new novel and start writing it. And then I'll kind of have my ups and downs because I'm bipolar. And so I have ups and downs anyway. But I'll get up to the publishing point and then I'm hitting publish, or, you know, my publisher is hitting publish and I'm super excited. And there aren't 20 reviews the first day. There aren't 10 reviews the first day. There aren't 5 reviews the first day. I'm not getting emails from anyone in my family or any of my friends saying, I just got your book. I'm excited to read it. And by the end of the first week of that launch, I feel like shit. I feel like I am not a real author. I am a nobody. I am nothing. Why am I doing any of this? And it's a horrible thing to feel. It's absolutely awful. It really is. So how do we overcome that?
I think we just...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we need to be self-aware and realize that this need for external validation comes from how we were raised and our school system, like that you need that praise from your teacher and you need those good grades and that gold star that tells you like, yes, you are awesome. You got an A+, like, good job. Like, we were raised, right. But we're like raised with that type of thinking that we need all of this external validation in order to feel worth in ourselves. So I think the first step to like kind of getting over that is just recognize that that's what it is. And that's where it comes from, that we don't need our worth to come from someone outside of ourselves.
That sounds really smart. How do you put it into, how do you actually make that happen?
Alcohol.
There we go.
I launch, start the next book, you know, and don't ever look back.
You just always work.
And I know my father is reading every single book I put out. So that's the only thing that, you know.
And just keep working, right?
Yep, well, I mean, think about like how many books you read. You don't contact every author that you read and tell them like, hey, I really liked your book. So you can't expect that, like, just because you didn't hear from your readers doesn't mean no one's reading it.
Right.
Like, yeah. I find out, like, Angel Born came out like for the first time like a while ago last year. And I find out randomly like, oh yeah, I read your book. And I'm like, you did? Like, I didn't even know you bought it. Like, I just have no idea who's actually read it and who hasn't. I'm always pleasantly surprised when someone's like, yeah, I read it and I liked it, you know? But like, you can't just assume no one's reading it because you're not hearing any responses about it. Because I know I don't reach out to a ton of other authors and say, like, hey, I read your book, you know.
Aww. Oh, that's my dad.
Jane's dad says, yes, I do. That's awesome. You know, you're right, Juliet. You are. It's just when you're in that moment and that kind of self-imposed depression, it's really tough to get over that.
Oh,
it's a challenge.
I'm bipolar too. I'm totally with bipolar. Club. Like, actually, I have been struggling with depression this week because I had a really disappointing signing on Saturday.
Aww.
And in the moment, I was like, you know, I sold a couple books and I was like, hey, that's a couple more than I was planning, you know? So I was really excited, but it was supposed to be this like talk on publishing and how to get published and like self-publishing versus traditional publishing. And I just didn't get the people showing up for the talk.
I understand that.
Yeah. Part of it was, you know, it was Memorial Day weekend. Part of it is bad, you know, not advertising enough maybe, but it's just like that depression just set in from like that disappointment. But I had to like keep telling myself like I didn't fail. It wasn't something that I did that made this event fail. It wasn't a failure. So I need to stop looking at it like that and just, you know, try to say, you know, take the positives from that situation.
Was one person there?
One person was there, yeah.
Okay. That's one person that you reached out to and touched and right. Liked mm-hmm. and talked to. So,
right.
You well, know, if nobody had showed up, okay, well, you know, no advertising was done and it's Memorial weekend, but mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the number of people, whether it's 1 or 100 or 1,000,
right.
That means somebody showed up.
Right.
Well, and so, you know, it's worthwhile in that manner.
See, and I think we just really hit on the source of how you can defeat that. And we can tell ourselves all day long that we are good enough, we are strong enough, we can do self-affirmations. But what's happening right now, the team, the tribe that you have around you is there to help pull you out. That's the key when it comes to just drowning in the doldrums. You have to have people there who are like-minded, who understand, and you can talk honestly and openly with about what's happening. And you know that they're on that level with you. They truly understand. And sometimes just talking through the feelings helps.
Mm-hmm. And I've got that author showcase this summer coming up at the library. And I'm already starting to get in on my anxiety about that. Like, what if nobody shows up? What if nobody comes? I'm like, nope, I'm not even going to think about it until I step on stage and start acting stupid, and we'll just see who's out there.
They'll come just to see you, Jason.
Yeah, for me, I have panic disorder, so my anxiety is like, what if people come and I have to talk to them? And then it's like, but what if nobody comes? I don't know which is worse. No winning. I can't win either way, yeah.
Nope, there's no winning with that. There's no winning with that. I want to kind of rewind a little bit here because we got off on imposter syndrome, which is great because it's a terrible thing. So that's great. But I was talking to you guys about how you find the motivation to keep writing, even if sales are bad. And you all gave me good, positive answers, which is exactly what I expected. Now, as an indie author, when we write something, it's not cheap. Because if we are not a professional editor or professional cover designer, we are spending hundreds of dollars, probably over $1,000, to get this indie published book on the market. We can do it on the cheap, but you're not going to do it real well. So if you aren't selling books, how do you tell yourself, how do you commit to, I'm going to write this book and spend $1,000 on it that I really can't afford to spend to get it on the market when I'm not selling books to begin with? How do you do that? Because that's where I think a lot of people have trouble. And that's where I'm in kind of a tough spot right now. It's like, you know, I wanna indie publish a couple books here, but you know, I don't have the kind of money to invest in that than I want to do it right. And knowing that my book sales are way down right now, it's like, oh, well, can my family afford for me to take a couple thousand dollars away from them right now? I don't know. But I think that there have got to be a lot more people out there than me that are experiencing something like that, that really want to publish that next book. Because what do we always tell people? Publish the next book. That's how you get readers.
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily, I found some affordable editors and some affordable cover artists, some of the newer cover artists that weren't really highly known at the time or have decided that they don't want to, you know, price themselves out of the market of indie authors. However, in the beginning, I was doing my own covers, which was bad. but in the beginning, I was making lots of money at that time because at the time it was, you know, Kindles were new. So everybody was buying everything.
Mm-hmm. Those were a great few years back then.
Yes, it was.
It's so much harder now for them to start.
Yes.
But it's not impossible. And you kind of have to go into it with the mentality of, if you want to put it out, what do you need to do? Do you need to learn a new skill? You can do your own formatting if you learn how. That can be done for free, so you can cut that cost off the table. Cover art should be done by a professional, so find professionals out there and see if you can work some kind of a deal with them where maybe you lay away a cover and you put aside a little bit of money and it takes a little bit longer in order to get that cover that you want. Same thing with editing. I know a lot of freelance editors who will work with you on some kind of a you know, pay now or pay 50% now kind of basis, and then the rest can be paid, you know, in installments. It's not impossible. It's just a lot harder to do, and you may have to do a lot more legwork. But if you want to put that book out, you can.
I heard that the editing isn't very important, actually.
I know for myself, when it comes to like advertising and buying books for event, I definitely have to budget for that. I don't have a ton of extra income just lying around for me to buy stuff on a whim. So I definitely plan ahead. But like Katie was saying with editors, you should actually never pay for anything upfront in the full amount. You should either pay in thirds or a half. Like I pay you half for this editing project and then I pay you upon completion. And that's to protect yourself from getting scammed if they take your money and run. Mm-hmm. So you can oftentimes work out a payment plan. I would say research who you're hiring because some people are overpriced and they don't produce quality work for that $2,000 you're going to pay them. So you can find somebody who fits your budget and is still good quality. A lot of times you can even work out deals. If you say, hey, I have 3 books that I'm going to need edited. Can you offer me like a reduced price because you're going to do all 3 and you're guaranteed that income. So, people are willing to work with you a lot if it's guaranteed work, you know?
Yeah.
And also, if you have a skill that you can trade, sometimes mm-hmm. you can do a trade share. You know, if you, let's say you are a formatter and there's a cover artist who can make a cover, you can trade services. And sometimes that works. There's a lot of bartering that goes on. The indie community is, for as large as it is, it's fairly close knit. Mm-hmm. We all kind of know each other or some degrees of separation from each other. So you can find people that you can work with. And just, you know, grassroots effort to get that book out.
What about, here's something that I would, this might not be the right group. You guys might not know. So if you don't, I'll table this and save it for another group. Mm-hmm. Joshua Robertson says, so many people are overpriced and do not have the skill set, experience, or training for the job they are offering. Then he said, in parentheses, like Rebecca Jones, Joshua. That is not cool, man. Oh, that's good advice.
Make sure to avoid the editor in the trench coat.
Yes.
But I have a question, and this is actually a serious one that I have been pondering. How do you use Kickstarter to fund a book?
I so want to know myself.
I don't know.
Nope. This is not the right group for this. Unless Julia comes in.
I would say you don't. I find that most people who try do not have much success with it.
Okay. Because we had a guy on the show a couple months back. Actually, it was just me and him, which is always awkward because I'm terrible at doing one-on-one things. Except for on stage, guys. I'll be great.
I don't believe that even in the slightest, Jason.
But no, he was telling me he is really, really good at Kickstarter. And not everybody mm-hmm. is, but he was saying that's how he funds every book. And I would really like, and Joshua, I appreciate you chiming in here. I would really like someone to get me a little bit of advice on how to do this, because from what I understand, Kickstarter, people donate money to you or they invest in your project. And in return, they get different things back, you know, along a tier system.
Are you thinking of Patreon?
Nope. That's different, but it's a similar tier system where if they donate $10 to your project, they might get an ebook and a poster. If they donate to me, right. they might get a hardback, that type of thing. But so I want to look into that a little bit, but I'm going to, we'll see if we can get some people on that know a lot about Kickstarter so we can get some good info on that.
I would say like work on building your reach and how big your audience is before that. Because if you're, Facebook is all like your mom's aunt's second cousin, they're not going to care about your Kickstarter. If your audience is like readers who loved one of your books and might be interested in supporting you for the future, or friends that are like super supportive and part of your tribe and are willing to like throw you a couple bucks to help you make your dreams come true, like you're going to get more success that way. If you have a better audience and a better reach than if you're just like I said, if it's just random relatives that could care less about what's going on with your life.
Okay. Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Rebecca wants to hire Robert Cano to edit in his trench coat. I don't know what the hell's going on out there in comment land on Facebook. You guys are crazy. Well, now, Katie, didn't Joe have a question that we were supposed to be addressing?
He did. He did way back at the beginning.
Might have to go back about
our writing styles, whether we're a pantser or a plotter. He was asking us if we would ever have we passed the point of no return. Would we ever go back to a previous writing style?
I'm always, all over the place.
My writing style changes with every book, but I would never go fully back to not knowing anything before I wrote.
I think that I have, I've fallen in love with outlining a little bit. You know, I don't know if it can be, if it should be as detailed as I've tried to be with this project, but I really like the idea of kind of mapping out where I'm going. It makes things less confusing at the start for sure. But yeah, so I like it. I'm total pantser when it comes to short stories, and I write a lot of those. So I go back to it for short stories for sure.
Well, I say it's like a road trip. Like if you know you're going from New York to California, you know you want to stop at the Grand Canyon. Maybe that's all you know, but that's kind of like outlining. You know, it's a very loose outline, but
yeah, that's true. Katie, you booked a flight to Michigan. That's like outlining. So now you're an outliner.
There we go. Yeah, no, I prefer my to-do list. I really enjoy that system because it gives me the freedom of pantsing my way to each plot point, but I don't have to feel like I'm, trapped in these things that have to be done.
Yeah, I'm a little bit like Katie in that way. If I'm outlining, I'm doing a to-do list. I mean, I have the whole, I've done the whole plot thing, but I haven't written the book yet because I've done the whole plot thing. So I'm like, okay, you know, and as you're sitting there trying to do that, you're like, okay, what am I going to do here? What am I going to do here? And this is where the pantser stuff comes in. It's like, I don't know. I'll just figure it out when I get there.
Isa just had a great comment. Isa says she's a hardcore pantser, but she's planning a book that will require careful planning to make sure everything meshes properly. And that's a great example of be forced to go in the other direction. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good fun. Wait, did we answer? We answered Joe's question, didn't we?
I think so. I think writing is an evolving thing. You're never the same writer that you were when you started, and that's a good thing. You learn new tricks of the trade. You learn better ways to do things. You don't necessarily have 20 drafts of a story any longer. You can get it done in fewer drafts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to know, Rebecca, why do pants equal dragon kryptonite? I don't even know what that means. I don't know where to start with this.
Wow, you are way behind on the comments, Jason.
There's so many of them, and I talk so much, I can't keep up with all of them.
Most of them are about you, though, so, you know.
Not too bad. Oh, shoot. You know, and they say you write for one person. One person you know is going to love it. And I think that's really good advice. The right to market people would not agree with that one bit. So if you're a right to market person and you're doing well, then you got to do you. But, you know, I have decided, I have picked my ideal reader. And it's funny enough, my ideal reader is actually a good friend of mine, Kendra, who is messaging me right now because she always sends me messages when the show is going. I think it's because she knows I'm online. I'm like, wait, but I'm on a show though. I can't talk to you right now. But I told her the other day, I was like, you know, I am going to write this next book with you in mind. And I really am going to, because she loves what I write and I know her style. I'm like, yeah, I can work with this, and I'm just going to write it the best I can. And I think that that'll be good. And it'll be more true to me than trying to please everyone else out there, which doesn't always work. Almost ever works.
No.
Katie, I got to say, I love that banner you've got sitting next to you.
I love the Dissension banner. I love that series.
That cover is one of my absolute favorites.
It is beautiful. It is a beautiful cover.
Yeah.
But that's an example of a cover that did not come cheap. those were expensive covers.
Yep. And I still technically need three more because the series is 6 books and I only have the first three recovered.
Ouch.
Yeah. So sometimes it takes time to get things done if you really want them. So I have to wait until funding's available. So
budget.
Buy some more books and then I can fix the old books.
Oh, yes. And Robert and Isa kind of echoed the same thing. Write the story you want to read. Which is great. But, you know, the funny thing is, Robert, is I don't really read books like what I write. But that's all I really want to write. And I've tried to write a book like the ones that I read, which are action thrillers like Jack Reacher. And I just, not my style at all. So I've got to write for somebody else. It just doesn't work. Oh, Joe, it's date night for Joe. Oh, have a good night, Joe.
Have fun.
Bye, Joe.
What's a date night? Somebody explain this to me.
Yeah, really? that's Little Caesars and a margarita for me.
Yes. Ooh, I like that idea.
That's me taking myself out to dinner.
Hey, I heard Captain Marvel's on Vudu, so I got my date night planned.
Sweet. Sweet. That's awesome. Heather still hasn't seen Endgame yet. All the kids have seen it, so I'm just waiting on her.
I have not seen it yet.
Yep.
I've seen it.
I did not get a chance to see Captain Marvel, and I wanted to see that first. So
I had to wait. You got to watch it first. It's so cool. She's awesome.
Yeah.
I have to see that one. I haven't seen Captain Marvel.
See, now everybody, you have your mission. If you have Vudu, you can rent the movie on Vudu and watch it tonight.
Is it on Netflix or Amazon Prime?
It might be on Amazon. It might be on Amazon, but Vudu is usually what I use for like movie rentals and stuff now. So
okay, yeah, because I've got the Fire Stick. So
have you started Good Omens yet?
I love that one. Oh my god, it's so good.
I've only watched one episode. I am so geeked to binge the whole thing tomorrow.
It was good.
Those two are amazing. I can't even remember the other guy's name, the angel's name, but he was Sheen, awesome.
David Tennant.
Michael Sheen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he is awesome too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. I'm so happy. Yeah,
those two together, man, they are great actors and they play off each other so well.
Yeah.
I love them.
Did you finish binge watching Lucifer?
Yes, I'm done with Lucifer now too.
Okay.
I don't know how they're going to have a fifth season though after that ending.
I know. I looked at my son. I said, I don't know. I think they might have just wrapped it up.
Now, Lucifer, if you guys haven't watched that one, definitely put that on your watch list. Yes. That is worth getting into.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that one goes, what, 4 seasons? Yeah. Yes. It was 3 seasons and then Netflix picked it up. So it's definitely on Netflix. And the 4th season, you can tell the difference between when it was on network TV and when it's on Netflix.
It's a little bit
different.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes. Definitely.
Totally off topic.
Completely off topic.
I'm just over here laughing.
What was that? I'm going to blame Jason either way.
But it wasn't me this time.
I can't even point the right way.
Oh shoot.
Yes, it's very hard to point, you know, to remember
which way. I'm like, which way am I going?
We make a terrible Brady Bunch, guys.
I like this one. I can just point up at Jason.
Yeah.
Oh, Joshua. You guys are just great.
Apparently, I haven't been paying attention to the comments section. What's over there?
I don't know. They're like freaking wild animals, I swear.
That's where alone for a minute. Look what happens. All right, so did we solve all of our author problems? Was there anything else we needed to talk about on the dark side of writing?
I don't know. I kind of got distracted by stuff.
We didn't talk about procrastination.
Oh.
Facebook, the meaning of procrastination.
We need accountability people to stop us from going online, or at least me, because I know that's what I do. Half the time that I'm up at midnight, it's I'm playing around on Facebook and just avoiding the writing I should be doing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Someone gave me great advice, and they said, the thing you're dreading, like, knock it out first. Mm-hmm. Get it done and over with. And then you'll be able to work on everything you want to do. And so I was like, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. You know, because you keep putting it off because you're dreading it. If you just, like, do it first thing in the morning, then you don't have time to be, like, to dread it, you know?
Well, I think that was that's good advice, Julia, but I like Isa's approach. Alcohol mm-hmm. is the solution to and the source of all of our problems.
Yes.
So we just keep drinking. It'll be good.
And Rebecca says we should just do our procrastination later.
Yes. Thank you. You guys, oh man, you guys are so wise. You're so wise.
Procrastinating.
Problems now.
Oh.
It is hard though when you're trying, you know you have to do something and you know you should, and you're trying to be a good adult, and there's so many other things you'd rather do, and they're so easy to do, and nobody's mm-hmm. stopping you from doing
that. Mm-hmm.
I need an adult. I need an adult in your adult.
I just like have to stop myself from overthinking. That's why that was good advice for me, is like do it before you build up the dread to do it. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I do, is I just make it this big mountain in my head of like, oh my gosh, I have to do this. And then it's too overwhelming to do.
Yeah.
For the most part, because of my schedule, I usually don't procrastinate when I need to write. Mm-hmm. However, in the space I am right now between between series, it's very easy to procrastinate than to pick something that I'm going to work on my stuff. I've been jumping over to the one that Katie and I are writing together, because I can put some words down there, not a lot, but
well, you're a writing machine, Jane.
Too. Oh my god, she is. She writes so dang fast. I'm gonna have like 1,000 words, and look, I did good today. And she's like, yeah, here's a whole chapter. God damn it.
Teach me your ways.
Here's my chapters. The difference between our writing style, my draft chapters are literally just dialogue. That's it.
Dialogue.
Same.
No scene setting, no nothing, just running dialogue. And then when I do my first, you know, revision, I start adding the scenes in. And then the next revision, I add the feelings and, you know, I layer it back on.
Same,
Jane writes it all, like dumps everything on the page. And I'm like, how do you do this? I don't understand.
It's 3D-dimensional to me. It's not one dimension.
I'm jotting down notes like a court reporter while I'm writing that the first scene, just trying to get the dialogue in.
I'm just trying to sort out all of Rebecca's comments.
We need to have her back on the show again just so she can entertain for us.
Oh man. Oh, she should have been on tonight. We should have had all the girls on tonight. That would have been
Drinks
fun.
With authors. We should be, you know, we should plan that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good. Well, we're kinda at the end of our time, right, Katie?
Sadly, we are.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of
part of the week. I love just doing this, hanging out with everybody.
Yeah. And this was good because Julia's awesome. And I like how you were just like, screw it, I'm going with the flat black background. You need like swords sticking out of your chair though, like a throne.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. The iron
nice. Throne. It's a pretty fancy chair. You can see it's got knobs and detailing and my regal chair.
Don't say knobs too loud where Rebecca can hear you.
Oh yeah!
Oh no! Too late. No.
Or columns. It's got columns and knobs, Rebecca.
Columns. Oh, I'm dying. Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
Oh, good. We're glad. You are welcome back anytime.
Yay!
Absolutely.
She's not going to want to come back after tonight. She's scared off, I think.
Yeah, she will. She loves us.
I do. I do.
We're fun people.
Well, thank you for tuning in, everyone. And to all of you out there commenting, we really appreciate it. We love it. We love the distraction. So hit, you know, like and share it with people and all that good fun stuff. And we'll see you next week.
That's right. We're more people to talk to and more distractions for Jason.
Yeah.